Welcome to the Valley Outdoors Radio, brought to you by Vexus Boats, building dreams with an unequaled passion for excellence. And now, with our hosts, Eric Colson, Don Cleaver, and Ava LaRue.
Welcome to the Valley Outdoors, everybody. Glad to have you hanging with us one more time. We can keep saying one more time, right?
Absolutely.
Until there's no more.
Hey, we've been.
But you know what?
We're having a good run, which is awesome. Thanks for hanging with us and making our run good. And we got a lot of cool stuff coming up today. We're talking about Henry Repeating Arms moving locally. That's a big story. Also, Alumacraft Boats has been sold. That's another big story coming up. Stay tuned. More Valley Outdoors coming right up. Eric Olson here, professional walleye tour champion, avid outdoorsman, and host of the Valley Outdoors Radio Show. Aquatic invasive species, or AIS, threatens not only our rivers and lakes here, but everywhere we boat. They come in many forms, and they love to hitch a ride to the next body of water on your boat or trailer. Join me to stop the spread of AIS by cleaning all weeds and aquatic material from your trailer before leaving the launch ramp. Drain live wells and clean areas that don't drain completely. Plus, don't forget to pull the plug. Clean, drain, dry. Together, we can make a difference.
Does your family need a break from the daily routine?
Hello, I'm Dr. Spruce. If you or someone you know needs a healthy dose of nature, visit discovertheforest.org and trade in the big screen for the big blue sky by visiting a local park or forest near you.
Hiking, picnicking, swimming, orienteering, climbing, admiring wildlife, or inhaling fresh air may result in heightened creativity, feelings of joy, harmony, satisfaction, and a euphoria that can only be explained as oneness with the natural world.
Whoa.
Guys.
Yeah, it's always good to be seen.
Ava?
Hanging out.
Hanging out.
Yeah.
Hanging out in, welcome to the up and down, and we like to comment on weather, but this has been crazy. I mean, this week, the weather's overnights are 20s, and I mean, can't we ever get out of this?
I hope so.
I do too.
I mean, spring's supposed to be here.
I know. Well, and the funny part is normally when you have a big snow melt, it would be great. Which delays the river from flooding. Right about now, I'd really like to see more water coming than...
Be careful what you wish for, because last June was crazy.
Well, in the northern part of the state, last week got a big dump of snow, and so that was good.
Yeah, it's been pretty fast.
We do need the pre-sip.
Yeah, because fall was dry, and it's going to a lot of it... is going to be absorbed into the soil, which is fine, but we need water. It definitely is going to be an important aspect to help the spawn be much more successful. Backwaters are real important for that, so get those fish in the backwaters to do that kind of thing. So have you acclimated from your jaunt?
Oh, yes.
I mean, we gave you a lot of crap last week.
But yeah, well back. Ready to roll.
Right, Don.
Yep.
Hey, so where's your first trip going to be fishing?
Canada.
What?
Well, not my first trip, but my first
I'll
probably be fishing in the river before I go to Canada.
And when are you going to go? That's open.
I'm actually leaving end of May.
No. When are you going to go on the river?
As soon as I get my boat ready.
Shakedown cruise, right?
Yep.
Make sure everything works?
Yep. Yeah, last year I waited till I backed it in up in Canada and prayed.
Okay, folks, that's what you do not want to do.
Yeah.
No, that's the absolute antithesis of what you will do and should do with your boat.
Yes.
Drive all the way to Canada, not knowing.
Well, I did check to see if the motor turned over before I left, but
turned over.
Yeah. Well, I knew I had power, so I was good. I was golden. But I don't recommend that method. No, I was really tied up and busy last year, so I will be much better prepared this year.
We certainly hope so.
Yeah.
I know, that's exactly it.
Well, we talked about it last week when we're supposed to take Ava out fishing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's, don't feel alone here. I've been like in his boat once, you know.
Sure.
10 years.
See, that's, well, and we've been doing this show for ever, and we haven't gone fishing.
No, we haven't. And but let's back up a second here. Don and I have gone on two or three trips to International Falls or up in the area on cab, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, we've been on trips together.
Now, I would say, not that I'm going to brag, but I would say that generally I did pretty good. I think I caught a limit every single time I went out. You had the opportunity to hang with me literally right inside my boat, right next to me, and we could literally converse. But what does Don do? He doesn't want to fish where we're fishing. So he goes off on his own.
Oh, well.
So I'm in a Volkswagen, and he's in a Lamborghini.
Mm-hmm.
There is the point where I said, this is where I'm going on the map. If we get 10 minutes more of fishing, then we get 10 minutes more to fish.
Yeah.
But we're still going to the same place.
And you don't
place.
Wait for it either.
Well, why would I? I got fish. I got places to go, fish to catch,
see
things to do.
Against.
You know, you got to remember. And so many people say that. And this, I have to say this because it's an important understanding when you're buying a boat. Somebody says, "Well, I don't need to go that fast." No, it's your type of fishing. Then go that way. Don, you run a tiller boat. It's a 90. It's a great boat. No question about it. It works fantastic.
It's my boat. It's what I want. Yeah.
Right. So. In the cold and wet, it's miserable because when you're driving, if it's rough, you're going to get spray all over the place, and that's just the way it is. You know that going in, but you like to fish in a tiller boat, okay? The point is, no matter what boat you buy, if you buy a boat that's an 18-foot boat, it's rated for a 150. If you put a 115 on it, you're going to have significantly different speeds. You're going to go from about a 45-mile-an-hour or 48-mile-an-hour boat to a mid-30s boat, maybe 40. So when it comes down to it, if you buy a boat, max the horsepower out. Now is the buying season.
I wonder what his point is.
I'm going, can you give me grief about having...
He's got 2 minutes to get there.
You're giving me grief about the boat and the Lamborghini thing. It's a matter of if you have the opportunity to go to a spot, you know where you're going, and you can maximize it, you may gain 15 or 20 minutes fishing both directions. You get another 40 minutes. Do you ever have enough time to go fishing, Don?
You know how many times?
Answer the question. Do you ever have enough time to go fishing?
There's only so
you
many
never days. Have enough time to go fishing is the answer.
Oh, yeah,
thank you.
Plenty of time.
No, you don't, because you don't spend that time. When you're on the water, maximize the time with your line in the water, because you can't catch it when you're, what? Yep, trying to get to your spot. You're not fishing. See? Plain and simple.
I enjoy the boat ride.
Understand. The people in the boat with you don't. They want to drop the line in the water. That's how that works. Oh, I love it. I love it. It's, you know, Don, having you back in studio is so nice.
Never allowed to leave again. You leave me alone with him. You realize this, right?
Hey, we get our shows done quick, don't we?
We
knock
sure
them out.
Sure do.
Yep, absolutely. Speaking of knocking it out. We are ready to knock this out of the park. We're going to jump into the next part of the show. Stay tuned. Hang in there. We will be right back. Welcome back, everybody. We always like to have you check us out on Facebook. Look at all the cool details and what comes up as far as activities that you can find in the state that you're looking to have some activities. And where else, Don?
TheValleyOutdoors.com.
Yeah.
And Facebook.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Both. Yeah. Kind of fun. Both of them.
We hope to have some exciting things
happen. The car and the truck with the both of them. See?
Yep.
Pretty simple there. Lots of articles to try and figure out which one we want to do first on. We talked a little bit about the Henry repeating one, which we will do. I think this story that I pulled recently, I think is, I can't explain it, but apparently the researchers and others can provide it, and I think it gives us an excuse to spend more time outside, Don.
That's I believe
you,
in this.
You totally buy into this.
I'm going to buy. I'm going to use this.
This
I'm going to put it on my back door. So my wife wants to know where I am. I'm getting rid of pain.
You just reserve that text and just hit the button and it's a copy and paste. Pain could be reduced by watching nature scenes. A new study suggests exposure to outdoor environments affects the brain's pain centers. Researchers say. They've long suspected that exposure to nature may reduce people's experience of pain, and now there's research to prove it. A new study led by a team from the University of Vienna and the University of Exeter, which was published in the Journal of Natural Communications, revealed that the nature not only relieves psychological symptoms of pain, but it also affects the pain centers. This discovery would and could lead to further progress in the exploration of non-pharmaceutical pain treatments. It's about doggone time.
I'm going to tell you about some when you're done with this.
Okay. They said 49 healthy adults sat inside an MRI scanner, the machine that monitors brain activity, while they received mild electric shocks. Oh, that sounds like fun. Screens shown to participants displayed three different images, nature scene, an urban scene, and a control scene of nondescript room. The brains were then checked to see if there's any differences in how much pain they experienced when viewing each scene. They then used advanced machine learning to draw raw sensory signals and the brain waves at that part of it. The research deepening a pre-existing understanding of how nature can affect symptoms of pain, and obviously in this particular case, it's looking pretty good. Numerous studies have shown that people consistently reported feeling less pain when they're exposed to nature. And as saying in a press release from the University of Exeter, that commentary was made, and the study supports previous research suggesting similar findings. I don't know, Don, but their hope the results will also serve as a renewed evidence of the importance of protecting healthy and functioning natural environments, encouraging people to spend time in nature for the benefit of both the planet and people, he said to press release, is practical implications for non-drug treatments and opens new avenues for research to better understand how nature impacts our minds. And I would say that is a pretty impressive and good
actually,
news thing.
You know, I actually have had an opportunity to experience a little bit of what you're talking about there. As this is going to go back several years, I had injured my back riding with a professional walleye pro.
Not me.
No, it wasn't Eric.
No.
But if you ever get a chance to ride with one of these pros, don't. And the reason is I was in the front of the boat, and the pedestal was broke, and they didn't say anything about it. And we hit a wave, and I literally herniated a 5-disc. And I ended up in a hospital. And part of the treatment that they did is they put a harness on you that they kind of let you hang by your rib cage,
yep,
which separates your spinal column. But while they're doing that, they have you try and picture outdoor scenes, waterfalls, and things of that nature. And then they also, the other option was they would put a comedy on, like a movie,
mm-hmm,
you know, a comedy that would get you laughing because then it creates endorphins that help.
The healing process.
Your back pain's going away, but it doesn't feel that good having your ribs clamped, you know what I mean? So you're trying to forget about that at the same time, and it works.
Yeah,
you
know? I know. I've got a steel rod in my back and 14 fused vertebrae. So
yep,
I
that wouldn't be from riding in a boat, would it?
Nope.
You know that speed thing we talked about here, one of these shows ago. I don't know if it was this one or a previous, but
last week we talked a little bit about that.
Yeah, about speed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, Don, I started out turning.
So now I drive slow. I don't hit those waves, Don, like some of these guys do.
But I'm in max compression because I started out fishing. I was like 5'11", and now I'm like 5'9½". So I'm solid as a rock now.
I think he's stretching.
I don't have to use anything. No, I'm truly, I'm actually 5'10", but it's, yeah. Welcome to the world. But I think the part that comes back with this is what we can do to take that concept and enhance it. because the outdoors is something that does relax people, and it also gives people a people, it gives you a hall pass.
Right.
I'm hurting, and the study that Eric quoted on his show said, and it is a proven.
I'm supposed to go out in my turkey.
I'm supposed to blind. Go sit in my turkey blind, and I'm supposed to go sit in the boat and
or
enjoy.
My deer stand. Or...
Yep. And I'm going to feel much better when I come back. I won't have an attitude. It's going to be great.
Yes. And I'll feel better.
And yeah.
Yeah.
And you won't have to listen to me gripe. So everybody right. feels better.
Yes.
Speaking of feeling better, Don, I need you to feel better about eating more of these invasives.
Yeah, I'm pretty anxious to hear about all this.
Yeah.
Tell me how to prepare them, too, would you?
Americans should eat more of these invasive species, experts say. Here's five invasive species the federal wildlife officials say Americans should eat, hunt, cook, and eat.
Are these all fish?
No.
Oh, okay.
Nutria. It is a native to South Africa. It looks like a, I don't know.
What is it?
It's a rodent. It's an invasive inhabitant of the Gulf Coast and Atlantic Coast and Pacific Northwest, known as a Myocaster copus and a semi-aquatic herbivore. Has meat that is lean, mild, and tastes like rabbit.
So you might as well eat rabbit.
Yeah, but
you know what they say a rabbit tastes like?
Chicken.
Chicken. Might as well eat chicken.
I agree.
Carry on.
See, you can get this in the outdoors, and there's no pesticides, any of that other stuff, it's in it, right?
Right.
So the point is, the chef that owns Grizz and Grizz in St. John restaurants told Fox News, in this case, Nutria is such a crazy invasive species, it was doing so much damage to the land that groups experiment with it on the menu. And it failed tremendously.
Okay.
Northern snakehead. Sharp-toothed fish native to East Asia. They are air-breathing fish. They can live outside of body water for several days, and they're able to wiggle from one freshwater habitat to another, said the Fish and Wildlife Service. The snakehead, they were first found in a pod in Maryland, and 2 years later, they were detected in the Potomac River, commonly found in the mid-Atlantic southeastern waterways. It's a meatier white meat edging towards chicken, and speaking of the commentary, describes snakehead as having firm, white, flaky meat. Try them in fish tacos, grilled or fried, she wrote, and just make sure they don't bite you first.
How'd they get here?
They brought them in, just like tilapia, or not tilapia, but the big head carp, same thing.
Well, that was
They're imported.
Yeah.
And they put them in an area.
Intentionally?
Huh?
Intentionally?
Yeah. Green iguana.
Yum.
Most visible of the invasive animals list. Florida-based angler, content creator, Darcizzle's Offshore. I don't know if anybody's ever watched it. She's got some cool fish she catches. State the art of fishing that the iguanas breed like rabbits, and they're here to stay. They don't eat any meat. They're vegetarians, but they do threaten the native wildlife, plants, flowers, etc. they have in Florida. They dig tunnels and erode seawalls as well. Iguana's really good, she said. Lives in a canal, shoots them with their bow and arrow. They use small darts for them, too, which is kind of funny. I watched some of those deals. They boil iguana meat in the water with potatoes and carrots, almost like a stew, to the point where the meat just falls off the bone. Then she'll plate up the stew on top of rice, and it's really good, she said. Just tastes like pulled pork. You won't know the difference. All right, moving on to big head carp, invasive carp. Silver black and grass carp species, native of East Asia. And the one thing to know about these, it's not like you can go out and purposely catch them because they are they don't eat meat.
Catch them with a net, don't you?
Well, you have to net them, but yeah, good luck with that. It's, you know,
well,
it's not
as easy.
You see
guys that they're pulling on water skis behind a boat and they're football helmet out.
Oh, yeah.
And a net.
Yeah. The guy that got hit in the head was on a jet ski and got killed. 17-pound carp hit you going 50 miles an hour.
Yeah, you don't want that.
No, that'd be kind of a bad deal.
Yeah.
Mississippi River System serves as a giant freshwater highway for these elements. We're trying everything we can do to fight these things with sound barriers and water barriers, air barriers, bubblers, and everything else. They said it's a very mild to almost neutral flavor. He said that they are obviously zooplankton eaters. That's why it's so important for to remove as many as we can, because they literally will topple the ecosystem. Right. If they eat the zooplankton, then the smaller bait fish have nowhere to eat, and they die, and then everything else goes and collapses. So the bone structure in the carp is probably the biggest reason they haven't really taken off as a grocery store fish. He said it's a practice to fillet them efficiently and avoid bones. And number five, feral hogs or wild boar, Don.
Yeah.
That is on my bucket list. I would like to do that sometime, is go feral hog hunting. Sue Scropa is their scientific name, and it is a full-blown ecological disaster. One of the guys who wrote the story says, I've never had a bad hog. They're all good. They eat everything. They root and take roots and just tear everything up. So it's not a pleasant thing. Daniel Pruitt, a Texas hunter and chef, the author of the cookbook Meat Eaters Wild and Whole, said they tear up all the pastures on their family ranch. They built a huge trap to catch them, and that's one way to harvest the hogs. And they said the hogs get a bad rap, but they've never had a bad hog. They are good eating.
How do they prepare them?
Same way you will with a regular pig.
Really?
Oh, absolutely.
Smoke them,
barbecue them, you know, put them on a rotisserie, put an apple in their mouth, and send them spinning. Yeah, that's good. A lot of people have said negative things about the hogs, but it's mostly how the meat is processed. They have several glands that they need to cut out while you're removing the hide and processing it. Make sure that the meat is quite good at that point. And they are really delicious. The flavor of every animal will change based on where they've been eating. So that's a key piece to it. If you're eating somewhere where there's no good food source, then they're all going to taste differently. And it will reflect that as far as the taste.
So far, the only thing you've talked about is Asian carp, that there's been any of that in our area, or in the Northland, so to speak, Midwest.
Per se, but they have found some feral hogs up here.
Where?
I don't remember the where.
Actually, I think they're concerned that they might be coming down from Canada.
Yes, that's where, yep, for sure.
Yep.
So, what to tell you there.
Yummy.
Yummy. I thought this is a cool story, Don. You and I talked a little bit about this off air. It has to do with Henry Repeating Arms, and they make a heck of an amazing quality lever-action rifle.
Yep.
Dean Bortz wrote this article out of the Outdoor News, and pretty cool in what Henry Repeating Arms is doing. And they're formerly, they produced most of their rifles in New Jersey. And,
you know, they have in the past produced their receivers.
Yeah, they're doing parts and pieces in Ladysmith. They're doing parts and pieces there.
Yep.
And so a little history of Henry Arms. Prior to 2006, Henry worked out an arrangement with Wright Products, a Rice Lake-based company that built storm doors and screen doors. And they produced some parts for Henry Rifles in that same facility. The relationship moved into five in 2006. They planned to move out of Rice Lake with the Wright company believing they were leaving there. Anthony, the owner of CEO of Repeating Arms, in 2006 bought the operation in Rice Lake from the Wright company. And they took off from there in 2013. They started assembling the first complete firearms in Rice Lake. It was their 4570. 12 years ago, and all the expansions in Rice Lake, Wisconsin, has allowed us to do more and more and more. The first building in Ladysmith was a big empty box. We're making barrels and parts there, not a full assembly plant. They had to transport the parts to Rice Lake from New Jersey to assemble them, but they maxed out in terms of space. So then they started creating more and more space. Some of the space that they have dedicated to Golden Boy and Big Boy rifles are now being trucked from New Jersey to the Wisconsin for assembly. Once all the move is complete, both the rifles will be completely homegrown built in northern Wisconsin. So realistically, what's happening now is they are moving everything. And I think it's a cool story. The one thing that's important is any serialized, and those are every rifle and shotgun made is a serialized unit, they need to be in a building that has a FFL, which is a firearms sales license. The decision, this is one of the questions you had asked me, the decision to move to Wisconsin has been in the works for over 3 years. It's a strategic decision to allow us to increase capacity, to continue as a leader in manufacturing lever actions, which really have taken off in recent years. They have such a demand that there's a number of items on back order, and it's going to give them efficiencies because trucking from New Jersey to Wisconsin was not an easy thing. The other thing that came into play was the environment in New Jersey for producing firearms. It got a little more difficult. And important as well, the difference in a business climate was one of the big decisions. Firearms is a little bit easier to build in Wisconsin. And Henry is now one more gun builder to leave the once-storied Northeastern Region Corridor. Not only that, but with a lot of the changes in license, requirements, shotgun is going away, and they're looking at going more rifle, in some cases single shot. And you can go to rifle, and that's a lever action. It's perfect for some of those areas in the farm areas that you can go to. Yep. So you can mount a scope on them, but they don't need to be long-range shots. But Henry is obviously a fantastic weapon, and I mean, it's good to look at.
It's a nice firearm. I did have a chance to visit their booth when I was at the SHOT Show in January at Las Vegas. So.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. So, well, that is a wrap for the show today, guys. I appreciate it. Don, thank you for being here, making an appearance again. Ava, as always, fun. We'll talk to you soon. Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Valley Outdoors Radio, brought to you by Vexus Boats, building dreams with an unequaled passion for excellence. Catch us next week, same time, same place. Have a great day on the water or in the field.